I like to keep telling myself, only one stayed under the cross, John. But did you also notice three Marys? That's a pretty good ratio, I think, of men's sympathy compared with women's and their loyalty. And they pretty much span the spectrum of womanhood. The Blessed Virgin, the wife of Clopas, a natural mother and wife, and the repentant sinner. A pretty good coverage, I think, for womanhood. All three loyal under the cross. But the disciples can't find them. All of this God used in order to evoke and, humanly speaking, produce Calvary. How come? And we get closer to ourselves. Because in God's providence, Christ's crucifixion was to be the means of redeeming mankind. And he wanted to let us know how the redemption was, past tense, accomplished, and is still being done by his followers. Let's look for a brief theological moment to analyze what we've been using for years, but I think deserves a little closer scrutiny here. When we speak, as we often do, about God's permissive will, we feel, as I know my students whom I examine in theology, that by using that adjective permissive, we somehow solve the mystery. So I keep pushing and prodding. Now, what does permissive mean? So he gives me a synonym. What does that mean? He gives me another synonym. We forget that though we say it is God's permissive will, in allowing evil, including sin, it is nevertheless God's will. Do you hear what we are saying? That evil, sin, all that we've seen, this cowardice, this treachery, this weakness, this malice, envy, jealousy, somehow, in ways that beggar description, are part of the mystery of God's divine providence, as dramatically, historically, shown on Calvary to be the means of redeeming the human race. In other words, God has a purpose in permitting us, and now we come down to self, in permitting us to suffer, sometimes unjustly on the part of others, but always, always, let's not forget, no matter how sinful or unjust on the part of human beings, from God's viewpoint, it is always providentially now, this opposition, which may come to us from others, nobody is looking for it, but none of us is so blind as to deny, some more, again, as with internal struggles, others less, but all the times experience it. The opposition may come from misunderstanding of what? Of our motives. After all, people can only see, well, what they can see. And let's not forget, they cannot see our motives or our intentions. Or, as I've discovered more than once, but after I misunderstood, I wonder, is it better to correct the misunderstanding or leave it go? Our words. Now, as teachers, sisters, I'm sure you appreciate what I am saying. And especially since, for better or worse, I'm not sure it's better, our normal medium of exchange is English. And if there is one misunderstandable language, it's English. Somebody wrote an essay once that I read on the impossible English language. To illustrate his point, he used the word fast, and he rang the changes on the possible meanings to that word. You name them, and the words got them. And he ended his essay by pointing out, look, the same horse you tie to a stake and he's there fast. You untie him, he runs down the track, and he is fast. They misunderstand our words, and even a dictionary is no help. They misunderstand our actions. So one source of opposition may be, and in large measure is, misunderstanding. Sisters, it's a real world. And we're not talking about the cosmos. We're talking about America. Better. Right now, Ohio. And within Ohio, a place called Chardon. And depending on where you are, that real world is the four walls, and I'm sure a roof over them, where these people are living, all susceptible of misunderstanding. And let's always include ourselves as misunderstanding them. A second source of opposition, misrepresentation. Now, the misrepresentation may be made to our superiors. So we're called down on the carpet, if the superior has a carpet. I'm treading on thin ice here. We are, I don't want to use the verb, accused. Let's say something is said about us which is less than complimentary. We're called back to give an account of our stewardship. We can't even remember. Oh, yes. And the next reaction, oh, no. Where do you start? Your very self-defense may be incriminating. By the way, here's one man who knows what he's saying. To our fellow religious, judgments are made of us. And by the way, we are naturally prone to size people up. Some of us need 30 minutes. Others can do it in 5. Usually those first impressions are the most lasting. They shouldn't be, but they are. We are walking images of people rather than the real selves we are. To our students, because, well, we had them last year. She has them this year. Sister told us this. Well, children, maybe you don't know Sister as well as I do, but to our students' parents, to our friends, and as I have learned, to the public at large, I've come to a point where, when I say something in public, unless I steel myself, I don't read it. I have made the National Catholic Reporter 5 times. I read it each time. Each time it was a blunt misrepresentation. So much for the misunderstanding and misrepresentation. Now, the opposition may come from another angle. It's too real, sisters, and a retreat ought to be real, right? The details you supply. I'm trying to help. That this is our cross. This is the following of Christ. It's not some dream world between the covers of a book. The opposition may come from, first of all, well-meaning persons. And we should always begin by assuming they are well-meaning persons who may think they are doing us a favor, honest, or sincerely opposing our policy because they think it conflicts with what they consider the right or the better thing to do. So they misunderstand or misrepresent, which implies everything else. There's a phrase in John of the Cross that I like. God, he said, often uses a diamond to cut a diamond in order to perfect us in sanctity. I will use the expression, though she may be listening, one of my former teachers. I remember on one occasion as a server in the church where I was, a parishioner in grammar school, I was chewed up by the pastor. Honestly. So I went to Sister for consolation. And only a sister would say this. John, she said, you know, Father is he's a good man, but he is a diamond in the rough. Secondly, the opposition may come from persons who envy our success or achievement. That, by the way, in case you don't know, is almost a synonym of achievement. They are spelled a little differently, but they're practically synonyms. Achievement and envy. You don't succeed without arousing opposition. Or as I like to recall, for years we used to have, all through my years of study, we used to have during our, not every day, fortunately, But about three dinners a week, we used to have sermons during the whole meal. Usually the first sermons preached by the scholastics. They had worked months on them. I've forgotten practically all of them, but one I'll never forget. His opening remark was, normally we just kept right on eating, but this time we stopped. He said, bellowing the words to get over the clatter of knives and forks, "The most unpopular girl on campus is the girl who has just won the popularity contest." Right? Anything we do, which others see, they instinctively compare with themselves. We do it, they do it. Don't be surprised. Envy is a difficult passion to control. The opposition may come from persons who feel threatened by us or consider us a rebuke to them. I cannot tell you, sisters. I just wish I could share with you the anguish, the pangs of agony in other communities. Now, you have, I know you people too well. You have your conflicts, but nothing like this. Where a religious woman, having vowed poverty, chastity, and obedience, that's all she wants to do, is ridiculed. Her life made next to impossible by her fellow religious. When she prays in chapel, when she refuses to go out, and I mean go out, at night, when she refuses to take her veil off. Can you imagine yourselves, sisters, having your veil tugged and pulled off your heads by a fellow religious? Yet, sisters, we are living in a world in which there are conflicting ideologies of the religious life. We wouldn't be human if those corresponding ideologies did not enter all communities. They have certainly entered both the society of Jesus. You see, I am not quoting when I say this. I'm talking from experience. All communities are faced with the confrontation of these ideologies, and this can cause pain. Let us therefore, and with this, reluctantly, I should like to conclude the conference. Let us pray for light to know and strength to follow the unerring teaching of the Church, so that whatever else anybody else does or says, we are safe, and we've got to be clear in mind. We've got to be sure. Secondly, pray for humility in admitting if and where we may be wrong. Because opposition can be salutary, right? We do have faults, things that do need correction. Pray for patience. Surprise, especially with ourselves, because though we like to think of others as being our crosses, I use the plural advisedly, our heaviest cross is we. The present suffering in the church at large, in religious communities, in yours and mine, is God's way of purifying all of us, to sanctify us, and through us, millions who will come closer to Christ. And I must add this, millions, especially in the Orient, who will find Christ, because we have paid the indispensable price of redemption, which is suffering with Christ. He carrying his cross, we ours, but fortunately with him.
This tape was produced by Consortium Perfecta Caritatis. All rights are reserved.